All right, here we are, episode number 3. We are back. Play the Advantage, U.S. Soccer Men's National Team. I'm Danny, as always, joined by Cody. We've got a special guest tonight, Mr. Matthew O'Carroll. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me on. I'm excited to do this with you both. Second-time listener, first-time caller. It's good to have you, Mag. Good to see you, man. I'm looking forward to this chat as well. Danny, why don't we kick it off with, you want to ask Matt a couple questions?
Yeah. Why don't we start, Matt? We want to know, if you look back at your lifetime, what is your favorite U.S. men's soccer national team? What is your favorite memory?
My favorite memory? I think a couple interesting ones, and it's probably none actually that, have been on TV. I was afforded the opportunity to, get to train and work out when I was younger at IMG. And at that time, that's where the national team was. So I got to see those guys, the youth team, and then, when the senior team was called together, come in and out of the locker room that was next to us. And I got to just kind of watch it. I never got to participate in any of those things. But to me, it was pretty cool to see those guys and see that up close, especially at that youth level. Where it was kind of so distant in your mind, but then seeing those guys, that are your age, pulling the jersey on, getting to go and play against other countries, I think was pretty standout to me as, it was tangible. There's so many different, I think every single game that we play against Mexico is a highlight that we win, right? Landon Donovan, when he's crossing the half line with the ball, looking back at the defender, right? And he's going on, I think is 100%, hands down, my favorite image. And because I want everyone to be like that, right? I want every player who pulls on the jersey to look like that at our, rival, our number one rival.
Yeah, no doubt. No, that's definitely a top goal for me as well, that Donovan goal where he gets through and, come on, where are you guys at? Come on, come
exactly. Get me.
I love that. Love that.
Dos Acero, you gotta love that one. Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome, man. That's really cool that you know, IMG being out there and everything and being able to see those guys, train up close in person, right? That's definitely a cool thing that you got to experience for sure. I'm gonna ask the next question then, and obviously you were a teammate of Danny and I's at University of Redlands. Graduated a year older than us, and we all had a phenomenal time as Bulldog student athletes, and just wanted to know if you had to narrow it down just to one, maybe two favorite memories throughout your 4 years, what would you narrow those down to?
On the soccer field
100%. Well, okay, look, I'll do one off the soccer field, one on the soccer field. You gave me two.
Okay.
That's fair.
I think my, one of my favorite memories had to 100% be when I was a freshman and we were at Emory playing in the NCAA tournament, and Max Bowman hit the buzzer beater. I was on the field. No one knew what to do. It was nuts. We were the underdogs. We got dominated and we won. And it was unreal. I had some friends that were watching. Our families were out there. It was a pretty, pretty cool experience. I think off the field, right? I had to say something off the field. I think, especially with your class, we were just so close to each other. And off the field by meaning like all the locker room banter, all, us hanging out at each other's houses, we just don't get that anymore, right? And I miss that, I think, almost just as much or more sometimes as being on the field with each other.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think when we were juniors and you were seniors, and we each had, Danny and I were living in the house like catty corner away from your guys' house.
Yeah,
we could literally walk over to each other's houses at any time just to pop in and annoy each other. That was great.
Exactly.
And annoy each other we did. Some
100%.
Pranks here and there, and some good stuff.
Yeah, just your normal typical college stuff. But I mean, even just the moments like getting dressed before practice and all that stuff together, all those little things, I think tend to add up. And those are stuff that you don't ever really get back, but it's stuff that you always remember.
Yeah,
definitely
love it. Yeah, those are some good memories for sure. The times that will always be, deeply ingrained in all of our lives, man. But U.S. soccer right now, U.S. men's national team. That's what this podcast. That's what we created this. I think we all are big fans of U.S. men's national team and just U.S. soccer in general. And it's been an interesting day to say the least. So it started out with two friendlies of the U.S. men's national team has gotten to play over in Europe. First beating Jamaica on Thursday 4-1, and then this morning beating Northern Ireland 2-1. I think one of the things that really I wanted to talk about with you guys is who were your guys from these camps? I mean, because we've had a lot of time to now analyze and see what the player pool looks like over the course of the last year. From this camp, last week of practice and games, who were your biggest winners and who were your biggest losers in moving forward?
Yeah, Cody, I'll start us off.
Yeah, that's, I was really pleased with the Jamaica result, 4-1. And obviously getting a result against Northern Ireland today, this morning, with Gio Reyna getting a goal and Christian Pulisic, scoring a penalty kick as well. And Pulisic was the best player on the pitch today, right?
No doubt.
So that's what you love to see, right? And that's kind of what we're, a little bit spoiled to see. And we're expecting that type of thing now, which is good, but it's also a double-edged sword, right? So in terms of player pool, I think, the 9 spot and the right center back spot are the two main question marks for me still. I thought, and to be honest, with the addition of Yunus Musa now, I love this kid. I think he's going to be tremendous for us. But after watching and putting Sebastian Leggett under the microscope and really critiquing him, he bagged another 2 goals against Jamaica. I want him as a starter right now until his spot's taken, right? It's his to lose, in my opinion. I put Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie and Sebastian Leggett in the central three in a 4-3-3. So I think Musa coming off the bench is a tremendous sub, right? So I think that's – I'll start off by saying those things. Matt, I'll let you pick up on anything that you noticed over the course of these 2 games with player pool.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big question mark, right, is the experience factor, right? Have this amazing talent, this, fountain of youth, as we've called it, this, young group of players that are really playing at the top level. We've never had it before. But the question mark to me has always been, where do you fill in the gaps of experience? To me, and we've had this conversation, in our text group that we have together, I genuinely believe there is a place for MLS players, some experienced guys in this team and in this starting 11.
Yeah.
I think, you look at a lot of different, opinions that are out there that are floating around online and people are sharing. And there isn't really talk of these guys that are in these lineups or in these pools. It's not sexy, right? Like to be playing in the MLS at the age of 23 or 24, because, the first inclination that people get is, well, hey, you know what? They're not playing Champions League football. They're past their prime. But something is to be said for these guys who are playing day in, day out, who are their stars for their clubs. And to me, the winners for me were Aaron Long, Sebastian Leggett, and now, we'll talk about this later, and other guys who are on the bubble who play MLS, right? Unfortunately, sure. Jordan Morris wasn't able to be a part of there. He won't be a part of this picture. Paul Arriola wasn't there. But, it's starting to make a case for guys like that you have something to contribute. I mean,
yeah,
you think about it and you go back and you say, hey, you know what? Yunus Musa, great, phenomenal talent. He's going to be there. But he just isn't playing day in, day out right now with his club. Sure. And you've got somebody like Sebastian.
He's 18.
Exactly. 100%. He's 18 years old. But then you've got Leggett, who plays, he wears the jersey, in a lot of games for the Galaxy. You got Aaron Long, who, is a standout center back, right? There was talk of him potentially going to Liverpool.
Liverpool could use him still.
They certainly could. A lot of teams could use someone like Aaron Long. But, to me, those are the winners, without a doubt, those two guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I agree. Danny, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I come at it from a different take, too. I think that, in my mind, especially after today, I think Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna, maybe, for the U.S. men's national team, are the two biggest winners. Because they have that confidence, that swagger back a little bit. Just from today, you saw that. And I think even though Gio Reyna in the Jamaica game missed some prime opportunities, you look back at that game, I mean, he actually played quite well despite missing some golden opportunities. And then he gets his goal today. Yeah, it was a deflection. But just seeing that ball go in the back of the net, right, that's going to do wonders for him going back to Dortmund. He's been in a bit of a slump this entire, you know, 2021 year. And so hopefully he gets that back and gets back into more of a regular situation at Dortmund where he's scoring goals and having assists. And then Christian Pulisic, he's the best player for the U.S. men's national team. And we need him to continue to even get better if we want to see the U.S. men's national team do big things. And so to see him play the way he did, he played okay against Jamaica, but to see him play the way he did today against Northern Ireland, I think that was critical for him. And seeing that, yeah, I think at Chelsea the last year, we're like, gosh, he is a left winger. And then with Chelsea's new system, right, he's not necessarily always going to be a winger. And so maybe seeing the way that he was played today, Berhalter using him really just floating wherever he wanted to go and completely obliterating Northern Ireland on a number of opportunities. I think to see that, I think it'll do wonders for his confidence going back to Chelsea and getting back into a regular playing time situation where he can actually contribute at the highest level in the Champions League and the Premier League. So I'd say those two guys. I think two other guys who really did impress me. I think Yunus Musa, while he may or may not be a starter for the United States come September in our qualifiers, gosh, I mean, what an incredible talent. Bossing the midfield like he did today, the ability to, I think sometimes he's definitely got a lot to learn, right? I think he holds on to the ball at times a little bit too much. But those are things that they can go back, look at film, and he'll learn and say, okay, I'll get better there. But I think that he's going to do tremendously for the United States. And then Brendan Aaronson, gosh, that guy is a stud. Coming off the bench, whether he's coming off the bench or whether he's a starter, I think, honestly, he could work his way into a starting role. And with this World Cup qualifying cycle that's going to come up this fall and into this next year, they're going to be, you know, in sets of three. So you're not going to have the same starting lineup every time, right? You're going to need to rotate guys in. You got to figure that these guys, that they're going to, whether it's Legette, Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, someone may be injured too, right? So you're going to have that rotation of guys and have that depth in the center, mid, up top, out wide, and in the back too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Danny. Brendan Aaronson, he really impressed me in these two games, and I think he definitely moved up in my depth chart. You know, him and Musa, if we start McKennie and Adams and Legette, let's say, as a central three and a 4-3-3, I'd say Musa and Aaronson are the first two off the bench if any one of those guys needs to come out. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree. You know, Danny, your comment about Pulisic and Reyna is, you know, being winners in this is, you know, to me, that's my expectation of you, you know, wearing those jerseys, wearing the 7 and wearing the 10. You need to show up. You need to be the winner every time you put the jersey on. There is no excuse for me at this point in time, despite your age, who you're playing for, what your pedigree is already. It's got to be a must. It's got to be 100%. Brendan Aaronson, you know, phenomenal. I think what he was able to do, come on and change the game, you know, in both of the times that, you know, that he's showcased that for us. I think Yunus Musa, obviously, we've talked about as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm pleasantly pleased with it. You know, the two things that I do want to go back to that kind of Cody talked about is that right back position and that striker position, right? What do you do with those? Because arguably with those two positions can completely change your format, right? If you don't have a striker, do you entertain the false nine? You know, if you don't have a, you know, bona fide left back option, or sorry, right back option, do you go to the back three, which we saw today? You know, is that simply based around Sergiño Dest and his ability to cut in on the left? You know, is that taking priority, or what are we figuring out, right? I think that's sometimes our struggle right now. We've got this fountain of youth intermixed with the, you know, not really having a set formation. And, you know, I think the fountain of youth is good problems to have. leading it to not knowing what our formation is, I think, you know, is something we need to figure out soon.
Yeah, that's a good transition. That was what I wanted to talk about next, is because, you know, in the first game against Jamaica, 4-3-3, right, which is what, you know, Berhalter's been running, yep. And we ran it effectively for a 4-1 win. This morning against Northern Ireland, 3-4-3, with Danny's favorite left-sided center back, Tim Ream, given the nod. 33-year-old, honestly, you know, it seems like the dinosaur amongst
and
the
I get, right? I get it. You know, you want to give that the elder of the group some love, and you want to show him, you know, he's there, he's valuable. But I think it's time to stop calling him in. He's a solid player. Yeah, he got an assist today. But gosh, it's time to start.
You can't deny it.
It's time to start using the players that you are going to use. I mean, if Berhalter honestly thinks that he's going to put Tim Ream in a World Cup qualifier, okay. But I hope that's not the case.
I hope not too.
But I will say, like, you know, we're not there yet at this point in our podcast, but you got to ask the question. Would Tim Ream be there over Kessler or Glad any day of the week for me today?
For sure. Yeah,
right?
Yes.
100%. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, we'll get there at this point in the podcast, but, and, you know, I want to bring it up when we get there, but is there a point or a value for him including some of these guys like Kellen Acosta or like Tim Ream? What if we do have to rely on them? Because what we saw from the under-23s today, I'm maybe picking one or two people from that pool to bring with us.
Maybe.
But
no, agreed.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, you go back to it, right? And we didn't talk about the losers, right? So who are the losers from these past two games? I think, you know, to me, some of the losers might have been, I guess what I have to say is, I'll just, you know, call it as it is. I think Berhalter lost this one. Hmm. I have to be honest in saying it. I think he left some people on the bench that should have had a chance to showcase their ability to play. You know, if he's really saying, hey, you know what, I want to rotate the guys, I want to see all these guys, I have to agree with you, right? You know, Kellen Acosta, the boat has sailed for him, right? Same thing with Tim Ream.
Yeah, he was okay against Jamaica. You know, he was in the first half, he moved the ball, they weren't pressuring him. He was pressured today by Northern Ireland, and he struggled, and he gave the ball away.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a sequence, that a 5-minute span in that first half, where he looked like the worst player on the field. And we need some depth at that sixth position, but the ship has sailed for me as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there was a missed opportunity that Berhalter had. He should have played some of these guys and should have given them more minutes that sat the bench rather than, you know, the Kellen Acosta and the Tim Ream.
I wanted to see Owen Odesawi from Wolves. I wanted to see him as a six, you know. And maybe Berhalter was essentially giving Kellen Acosta one last chance to prove himself, right? Sometimes if you give a player enough rope, they hang themselves, right? So maybe that was the case. I don't know. You know, in a game where, you know, against Jamaica, where, like Danny was saying, Kellen had plenty of time and space, he played well, right? Against a more physical opponent and tougher opposition in Northern Ireland, he was not good today. Right.
So, and a Northern Ireland team that isn't really probably that good. I mean, when we go up against better teams, when we go up against Mexico, when we go up against a better European team, if we actually get to the World Cup, it's not going to cut it. And I think we all realize that. The other, a big loser for me was, honestly, and I root for the guy, but Anthony Robinson, I don't think had a very good couple of games. You know, I should back up. Jamaica, I thought he was okay. He came in as a sub. He created some down that left side, put some good crosses in. It was a limited amount. But today against Northern Ireland, you know, he had a chance right in the first 10 minutes of the game. Pulisic plays him through. It looked to be a really golden opportunity. His cross couldn't find anybody. Wasn't pinpoint. And he just wasn't sharp.
Right.
And that begs the question, right? Is that mean Sergiño Dest? We put him on that left side with Pulisic or whoever we play on that left. Is that better to have him over there as opposed to on the right?
I'll touch on that. I mean, Anthony Robinson, I don't think he was at his worst today. I think he was at his worst back in the fall when we had the friendly against Wales. I mean, he crapped his pants in that game, right? Today, he played as a left-sided wingback in the 3-4-3, right? I would play him, and I told you guys this, but I would play him as the left-sided center back in the back three, and just say, Anthony, you are a physical specimen. You are good at defending. You're not that great going forward. Just stay home, stay connected to our back three, and shut down the opponent. And then we play someone else as a left wing back, whether it's Musa, whether it's some, you know, whoever it may be, right? Even Morris or Areola could be that guy. I don't know, but we can find someone. I was going to touch on my loser of this morning was Sergiño Dest as a right wing back. He was not good today. It was not the same, and we were expecting, maybe our expectations were too high because we were saying, oh, he's playing a right wing back for Barcelona. Different cast, right? Different personnel. And, you know, but the thing that bothered me today about him playing a right wing back is he kept coming inside so centrally. And I wanted him to stay outside and let Gio Reyna come inside, right? Dest, stay wide, stay outside, be patient out there. You get the ball, then do your 1v1 within crosses. He did not do that. He came inside, and now Gio Reyna comes inside too, and now we have no width on the right. So that was a loser for me.
No, I agree. I mean, there were times where I picked my head up and he was, you know, standing on left center midfield, and it was like, you know, what are we doing here, right? We're just compacting the field for the opponent. We're making it easy. You know, I think, you know, right. Cody, you bring up a great point, right? Is, you know, I often, you know, you look at this, right? And we watch whether it's Dest play for Barcelona, McKinney for Juventus, or, you know, guys that are playing for these clubs around the world. We have to keep in mind the players that they're playing with, right? We have to keep in mind the fact that every time Dest is on the field, the, you know, 10 other field players from the opponent are prioritizing Lionel Messi, right? And if they're not prioritizing...
Who's that?
Yeah, never exactly. Heard of him. 100%, yeah. Right? Yeah. Or it's Dembele, or it's Griezmann, or whomever. And so then, of course, right, it leaves Dest the opportunity to exploit the, you know, isolated player because the rest of the team is worrying about another attacking threat.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think the one concern that I have is, you know, for us, if we move to a formation that prioritizes Sergiño Dest's perhaps attacking ability, what are we taking away from the rest of the group, right? I think for us, you know, if you are to talk about a weak point, you know, in our squad, I think, you know, you start to really look at perhaps like a center back position, right? John Brooks. Gosh, I mean, we didn't talk about John Brooks.
Yeah, he was
poor.
He was next.
He
on my
might have been the worst.
On my biggest loser. Yeah.
I mean, I forgot about him because I forgot he even played. I mean, that's how shocking it was.
Yeah.
He couldn't play a ball right out of the back. He wasn't mobile. He couldn't do those things. So, to me, you know, it's how are we going to provide coverage for the center, for our center back position. Defending, no doubt, Sergiño Dest can go forward attacking wise. But what do we have? Hopefully we'll have a healthy McKinney and a healthy Adams to help protect the back two, the center back positions. But I get worried when we want to really put this like attacking expectation on some of these defending positions because we don't have that center back coverage and we have a wealth of attacking options up top.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, that's well said. And that's something that I'm concerned about too, right? But I think it's situational and it depends on the opponent. If you play a team that you know you're going to boss the game with possession and your outside backs are getting high and wide and just way up into the attack and you're comfortable with the ball and able to do that, fine. But if we're playing a top team in the world, right, if we're playing Belgium or Brazil or whoever it may be, where we're not going to have the ball as much, I mean, I don't want our wing backs, like, getting that high up and out of position. I mean, Dest isn't as good of a defender. He showed that in the game as a left back. Right, he got beat and allowed some crosses to come in against Jamaica. I think it's definitely situational. If we're playing El Salvador, sure, yeah, we'll keep the ball, right? But if we're playing someone tough, then I want Anthony Robinson to just be a stay-at-home left back and just defend. Do your job.
Yeah, I think something that we saw, though, right, Sergiño Dest was so good. He was actually surprisingly better going forward on that left back position than he was today. In a right wing back position. So that begs the question. I think back the other guy who I forgot, who I really didn't think played that role, was Reggie Cannon. I thought he was okay at times, but we're looking for someone to solidify themselves as someone else who could be an outside back. And I really don't think we have that yet. And so it's going to be important next 6 months for sure. And Matt, you talked about the spine. Yeah, we have McKinney and Adams who we hope are healthy. And those center back positions, John Brooks, I think we penciled him in. Gosh, he was bad. So you hope that you hope that he gets back to a consistent form that he's been at Wolfsburg and putting them in potentially a Champions League spot for next year. But is it going to be Aaron Long? Will it be Matt Miazga? Will it be Chris Richards? Is he actually going to get more minutes at Hoffenheim and work his way up? Will he get picked back up by Bayern? Will he get that experience that he needs to actually start being consistent at the higher level? So I that center back, I think, you know, if you have one good center back, okay, you get two, man, you are dialed in, and we don't have that yet.
Jay Demerit, right, Cody?
Bring him back.
The other one.
Jay Demerit and Boca Negra. Come on, suit up.
Cody, the guy who I know you love, and I forgot about today too, who had a little cameo, Daryl Dike. I mean, because that nine position, right, is one of our other question marks. And Daryl Dike, no doubt. Matt, you said it, you know, earlier today. He's the American Romelu Lukaku, right? And so, gosh, he was good despite not scoring. I think he's definitely he's got to be in my top three now of that in that number nine position. And you hear Berhalter talk about it, and you see Josh Sargent's name always come up. You hear Giassi Zardes still, who we haven't even talked about in forever. But then you hear, you know, Daryl Dike, the way he's playing the championship now. Gosh, I think that those are my top three number nines right now.
I mean, absolutely. It's a baptism by fire in the championship right now, and he's proving it, right? I would argue with anyone that is one of the toughest, if not the toughest league in the world based on, you know, quality, but also rigor and schedule, right? So he's being put through the ringer there. And he has this fear factor, the power and pace fear factor that just, you know, we don't have with Sargent. We don't have with, you know, whoever else you want to throw in that situation. We just don't have anybody out there. Zardes, yeah. You know.
Altidore.
Oh, I didn't even say that.
Is Altidore even still in the mix? I don't even know. that's a great question.
Listen,
too. When
people still talk about Julian Green, anybody is up for grabs. Let's just throw it out there, fair. Right?
So I'll tell you what, who's moved down in my strikers list all the way to, I think he's 10th in my depth chart at the nine spot now is Soto, Sebastian Soto. Mm. Poor guy. I mean, he just blew it. He was doing okay, but he's out of the picture. Yeah. But I keep going with Sargent as my first choice right now. Gotta go with the Ginge. Right.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, DK, he's a different type of nine than Sargent, right? In terms of just the physicality and the fear factor, right? I think Matt was saying, right? Just if you're a defender having to defend this kind of guy, you're like, oh gosh, I'm going to be in trouble, right? So, but, you know, and this could be good in terms of like when we have to do our World Cup qualifiers and we have to rotate players.
We're going to have to.
Okay, Sargent, you get a game. Okay, DK, maybe you get a game. Zardes or whoever it may be. I don't know. Jesus Ferreira, whoever Greg is thinking. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see for sure.
I mean, and I'll ask both of you this question. So going, you know, what questions do you guys still have after you saw these two senior team appearances and games from these players, from the coaching staff, from the program? You know, what couple questions do you have remain?
I think the question I have still is, I guess, formational wise, are we going to go with that 4-3-3? I think, you know, Berhalter was experimenting today with the 3-4-3. Not a bad idea, really, to figure out can you go that option. But I think I think, you know, U.S. will play the 4-3-3, generally speaking. But gosh, in my mind, I think that nine spot, you know, we still don't have that solidified down. And that's okay. We have a lot of guys who are fighting for that spot. So I think that figuring out how we get someone to really be pouring in the goals and seeing who we can find in that spot.
I think for me, the question still is the right center back. Who's it going to be? If we're playing a 4-3-3, which I think Greg was experimenting today, like we were talking about, but if he goes with the traditional 4-3-3, who's going to be alongside John Brooks? And it's interesting, like we said, John Brooks has been penciled in as an automatic starter, a lock, but, you know, that's TBD as well. I mean, we don't know. Is it Aaron Long? Is it Matt Miazga? Could it be Chris Richards or Mark McKenzie?
Yeah, I didn't talk about him.
You know, or Tim Ream. We hope not, but, you know, don't count him out.
Well, at least he didn't duck like Miazga did.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, the question that I have, you know, I've got two that linger, right, is, you know, who is Greg Berhalter? Right? Like, I don't think we've gotten that yet out of him. I truly don't. And you know, you say that because you look at other coaches from around the world, whether it's the club level or the international level. You know, Tata Martino with Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting. Yeah. You know the style of football he's playing. He's going to select the players that fit his style. You look at Mourinho, right? You look at, you know, Pep. You look at Klopp. You look at all of these top-level coaches, or even, you know, who I've actually really grown really fond of, you know, in the past year or so, is Brendan Rodgers, right? You look at these coaches and you can say, hey, these are the qualities. This is exactly what they look for. I scratch my head with Greg. I truly don't know what type of coach or who he is or what do we have? What does he bring to the table? I think the second question I have is this player pool, right? We have this wealth of options, but it's almost becoming like our Achilles heel in some ways.
Yeah.
And I've been this, you know, proponent, I know, to you guys in a group text, probably, you know, more annoying than
pretty annoying,
you know, you'd ever, yeah, pretty more annoying than you ever admit. Like, it's, you know, I get the rotation thing, but are we ever going to learn who's who, what's our identity if we keep rotating guys in and out?
I mean, we've got qualifiers coming up in September, right? So you got Gold Cup coming up this summer. We got Nations League first and then Gold Cup. How are we going to prioritize those rosters, knowing that we don't have the Olympics anymore? So we've got those two things. We got to get some gelling going, right? Yeah, I know you've really wanted that, Matt. I mean, September is not that far away.
I mean, and the other question is, you've got to get some positivity going, right? After this afternoon's result, it's, you know, the spirits aren't very positive around here. So, you know, you've got arguably the Gold Cup, and then, right, or you have Nations League and the Gold Cup, and then you have World Cup qualifying. But you got to pump positivity into the group now, right? Yeah. So does that impact your selection? I don't know. You know, you know, maybe this should have been a podcast for us, you know, a year ago or so, when it was talking about the, you know, the coaching selection and who was going to be the gaffer. You know, Berhalter wasn't my choice, but you know what? I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Ralph
here.
Perez was your choice.
Ralph Perez was my choice.
Cody Carlson was my choice.
Yeah, you guys are right there. Jesse Marsh was a, you know, close second. But I got to say, like, I want to know who Greg Berhalter is. I want to know sure. What your style is. And you got to show us it, man. Because right now, it starts with the senior team. And it segues to all the youth teams, right? And it segues to the identity. We'll go there. Jason Christ, I don't know what he was saying in the presser afterwards. I mean, he was talking about players not even being able to complete passes, balls going under their legs.
Yeah. Jason Christ.
I mean, I'm baffled.
U.S. soccer, should we segue to that? I think we should. I mean, at this point, and I agree with you, Matt. Who is Greg? I think we don't – his player selection – always baffles me, right? And it baffles people in terms of not only the players you're bringing in, but then who you're starting. But gosh, you look just U.S. soccer as a whole. The hiring process for U.S. soccer has been one of the biggest question marks. You look at Jason Christ, another failure. Four of the last five Olympic games, we have failed to qualify now after today's disaster against Honduras. Jason Christ, he failed at Orlando City, failed at New York City FC, yet he gets hired. The U-20 coach, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he, you know, another guy who failed at Colorado Rapids. The coach selection for U.S. soccer seems to really be lacking. Berhalter, I know he took a lot of criticism when he was hired. I wanted to give, like Matt, like you, give him the benefit of the doubt, and I think that he's done a good job. he barely saved his job after losing to Canada, you know, about a year and a half ago. I think he might have been fired had they not won the next game. So he won the next game. He's still the coach. He's done a good job since then. But gosh, his player selection at times baffles me. And U.S. soccer as a whole, I think today losing that Olympic qualifier was just gutting, disappointing, and just thinking that we had made all this progress and then taking another step back.
And I mean, the one thing comment I have to make is, you know, you made a comment about the U.S. Soccer Federation. I think that could be a podcast in and of itself, right? Just simply discussing, you know, what that looks like. And I think what I have to say is that, like, and I said this to you guys earlier today, I said, look at the teams who we've played. Average FIFA ranking of 60 our past games. That's not going to attest us, right? That's not going to show us who Berhalter is. That's not going to show us our player pool, our real selection that we need to make, right? That's the stuff that the Federation needs to truly work on to find stronger opponents. Why are we playing Jamaica in Europe? For crying out loud, we're in Europe. Find us another opponent other than Jamaica. I don't get it. I don't understand. And then you watch Mexico, right? Mexico, their average of their last recent opponents, their FIFA ranking is 25. They played less games than we have. Yep, so we haven't had that much rep. But they've had much higher quality opponents playing South Korea, playing Japan, playing different styles of football. You know, and here we are. We're playing...
Well, they also just lost to Wales the other day.
They
where we tied them.
They did lose to Wales.
USA tied Wales. Woo! We're the best, baby.
They lost to Wales. Yeah. Head-to-head.
They are. Terrible results, man. Clearly, we're just way better than
them. Yeah, we tied and they lost, so.
Yeah. But that I'm going to leave it at that. You know, and I think that's a good segue kind of into, you know, what happened this afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kick it off. It was brutal, guys. U23 losing to Honduras today in the semifinals. Win or go home, right? Win and you're into the Olympics. Oh, I said World Cup. No. Or you know, lose again to Honduras, same team that knocked you out in 2015. Here we go. It's like deja vu. It was brutal, and it was rough to see, you know, the lack of intensity. It seemed like a lack of passion, mm-hmm. and seemed like not enough mental toughness and grit to really just get it done. The team we had today could have beaten that Honduras team. I don't doubt that. I mean, we had the talent, we had the players to be able to do it, but we didn't. Ultimately, Honduras wanted it more. They were mentally tougher. They capitalized on some pretty horrendous errors from us. By our goalkeeper in particular, David Ochoa, who had been phenomenal throughout the entire tournament until, you know, that blunder, which ultimately cost us. But it's not just him. Yeah. I mean, it was the whole team that was just very, very subpar today. And the only one for me that showed some passion was Jackson Newell, the captain. I mean, he scored a phenomenal goal, banger, to cut the lead from 2-1, and he was jacked up, right? He was excited. He was trying to get his team going, but I didn't see that from any of the other players, to be honest, right? And so that's frustrating. Curious, Matt, what do you think about today's result?
Yeah, I mean, you know. If us not qualifying for the World Cup wasn't a wake-up call, this has got to be more concerning. When we didn't qualify for the World Cup, the writing was on the wall. It was an aging roster, a roster that we knew was outdated. We didn't have the talent, you know, all those things. Well, we had the talent, right? But let's say, right, they weren't as talented as this current player pool that we have. That's playing a senior game, right? So, I mean, and everybody's talk was the future, right? The future, the future, the future. This U23 team is part of that future. They were not with the senior squad, but, you know, half of these players are probably in contention for future U.S. games. That's 100%. Yep. So, you know, if we're sitting here still talking about the future's now, man. I'm sorry, but that ship has sailed for me. That ship has long gone. You know, I keep harping and I harp on the fact that, like, this is a results-oriented business. It's now or never, right? It sets the tone. It truly does. And it was unacceptable. I think you listen to all the, you know, all the former U.S. players, you know, Alexi Lalas and Twellman, and, you know, those guys, they were taken back by it, you know? It was disheartening to them. You know, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read that article on ESPN about when they went to the Sydney Olympics in 2000, that team that went. And there was, the players were talking about, like, how much of an amazing experience it was. How, you know, some of those guys, you know, Josh Wolf and Landon Donovan was 18 mm-hmm. at that time. How much fun they had, you know? The Olympics was this huge thing. It was representing their country. You know, their kids, like, say, oh, yeah, like, my dad went to the Olympics. You know, it's huge. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a huge deal. And, you know, it was funny because, like, my wife was like, man, I'm like, why are you that upset? And I was like, well, because I think this, to me, this is something I participated in, right? I participated in our youth programming, right? You guys participated in our youth programming as part of, you know, U.S. Soccer Federation, all these things. Cody, you still do, you know, at a coaching level.
Yeah.
And to see this transpire against, you know, a Honduras team that we were eons on paper better than them, but the mentality wasn't there. We didn't have the mentality and we didn't have the heart. So to me, I mean, that's the ultimate slap mm-hmm. in the face. If we weren't as talented and we gave it our all, fine, fair, whatever. Okay. If we lost to Mexico, you know, in the semifinal, that Mexican team, you know, okay. You know what? They were way better than us. 100%, but not the Honduran team, but that's not taking nothing away from Honduras, right? At all.
Yeah. They played well, they played with heart and they played with what it took to get it done.
And they're missing their captain.
Ultimately, they wanted it more. Yeah. They wanted it more.
Yeah. They deserved it. So, no doubt. And you almost could feel it coming. It was like I was trying to tell myself, no, it's okay, we got this. And then today really solidified me. Wow, I thought we were moving in the right direction as a whole in U.S. soccer, yet there are still so many underlying issues. And, I mean, the first three performances, you look at the game, you look at our first game of the group, did not look good, won that game. Dominican Republic after that, won that game, took a while.
Last 30 minutes, right? Last 30 minutes,
yeah.
We look good.
Mexico game, again, not good enough. Mexico's a good team, and they were better than us, but good didn't get it done. Today, we looked dangerous at times in the second half, didn't do anything in the first half. And it was just, it felt as if, man, we put all this effort and time into U.S. soccer, and then just to see it, again, like a gut punch. And, yeah, the heart, where was the heart? That was one of the things. That's one of the things that's always made U.S. soccer great, right? Maybe they haven't always been the most talented teams over the years, but they've always had that hard nose, get in, hard tackle, whatever that might be, that takes you that extra minute, extra inch that's going to get you across the finish line, get that ball into the back of the net. Jonathan Lewis, I mean, I'm sure that he's going to have nightmares about missing that shot from 2 yards away from goal. David Ochoa, he was probably the brightest spot for us in this tournament. And he made, unfortunately, you know, the biggest mistake as well. And that's soccer. But, man, you look back, there were so many question marks at Jason Kreis's decision-making at the start of the tournament, his roster selection. You leave Jeremy Abobasi, Eric Williamson. Yeah, I'm a Timbers fan. Those two guys should have been on this roster. You cannot call in five defensive mids. You saw it. Subbing in Johnny in the 88th minute. For an attacking player, that's supposed to be your attacking threat to get you back into the game. Jason Kreis, what are you doing? I mean, my goodness, it was a disaster from start to finish. Jackson Ewell, the only bright spot really today, and just disappointing.
Tanner Tessman,
you're right.
Tanner Tessman.
He looked good, which surprised me. I just hope. It seems as if from the top down, it's like we're not learning something, and it's disappointing. Knowing that, again, we have so much talent right now. This is maybe the deepest our player pool in U.S. soccer has ever been, yet we couldn't get it done today. And it's a results-based business. You said it, Matt. And this was since 2017. This was basically the most important game since that 2017 disaster. And again, we lost. We, U.S. men's soccer, is not getting it done when it matters. And it's discouraging. And I hope that we can Berhalter and the team. They were watching the game, right, over in Ireland, Northern Ireland. Can they figure out, be like, see, wow,
yep.
Pulisic was there 4 years ago. Now they're seeing this today. How do we make sure that doesn't happen again?
No. Well, man, I mean, you guys definitely have valid points there. I'm going to try to spin it a little positively, right? And the only thing that I can say to maybe make me feel better is going, well, this is maybe a C or even a D team, like in terms of lineup within the pool of U23 eligible players. I mean, if we had the available players at our disposal to be able to do these Olympic qualifiers, I mean, I think we would obviously qualify. If you could throw in Pulisic and Musa and Tyler Adams and the lot, then we'd be good, right? But we relied on a C or even a D team, a pool of players to try to get it done, and we didn't. So the question that I want to pose to you guys is, well, I'll start with Matt. Any of these guys from this U23 Olympic qualifier roster that you think has a fringe opportunity to get a chance with the A team or with the senior team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting too, right? Because, you know, I've got the roster pulled up right now for the U23s. And, you know, the first inclination that goes through your head is these are young guys, right?
Right.
You know, Kessler, 22. Justin Glad, 24. You know, Jackson Ewell, 24. You know, Jordy, 22. You know, Salcedo, 24. You know, 24. These aren't young guys.
Right.
Yeah.
These are older guys. You know, and so you're wanting... You know, when you talk about the problem the senior team has is experience. Well, what are these guys going to bring to the table?
Yeah, no.
You need to fill it with that. If Berhalter thinks that, hey, you know what? You know, these U23 guys are here for a reason. And of course, right, there's a lot of different COVID travel constraints, all these different things that, you know, people not being released. So sure, there's maybe one or two pieces that are moving. But to me, everyone stays put. Maybe you take Jackson Ewell. Everyone stays put as to where they are. Nobody.
Yeah.
The only guy who I think about is Jackson Ewell. And quite frankly, he wasn't great until today. And he wasn't great today. But he scored a very good goal today. And he was the only guy out there who looked the part. The rest of the tournament, he wasn't that good. And quite frankly, the team as a whole... And again, Cody, you're a coach. I think that at times like this, it shows how critical the coaching piece is. Yeah, the players have to get it done in the field. But if you don't have a coach who's going to inspire those guys out there and get them to put their hearts and their minds into every second of that game, the coaching part is huge. But man, I of that player pool, Jackson Ewell maybe. But that's what worries me about that sixth position, right? Yeah, I think we all think that Tyler Adams is a lock there. If he can't go... Jackson Ewell, that worries me. Kellen Acosta, he worries me. So I think that those are the things that concern me at this point with our player pool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in agreement with you guys. And, you know, yeah, Jackson Ewell wore the captain band, and we've been talking about him and stuff just because he had a great game today, even though they lost. But he showed passion, right? And like I was saying earlier, he cares, right? He was the guy that seemed to wear his heart on his sleeve. So, okay, you want a guy like that, right? In terms of his ability, he's a different type of six. He's not the best defender, but if you're playing against a team that you're going to dictate possession and the rhythm of play, then, yeah, you could have Jackson Ewell in there to be that guy. But if you're playing against a team where you're not going to have the ball, I don't want him in there because he's a liability defensively, right? So I would say him. He's definitely a fringe guy, and obviously he's got a chance with the senior team already, but I think he's going to be in the mix going forward as well just because we're limited in that sixth spot. The other guy that I think, maybe not right now, but I think in the future might have a chance, believe it or not, is David Ochoa, the goalie. He had an absolute gaffe today, which cost us. But he's, out of the younger goalies, and looking at what we have in the goalkeeper pool, I think he has a chance to continue to develop and get better. And maybe by the time he, in a few years, he might be a guy that I don't think he's going to overtake Stephen, but he might be a viable backup. Who knows? And it's maybe I sound like a crazy man saying that, oh yeah, the goalie, he's one to watch out for after that, you know, he literally just passed it to the Honduran player and one touched it into an empty net. I mean, bizarre.
I mean,
just,
he saved our butts though, this tournament.
He did. Know? He did. So it's kind of like, yes, we all make mistakes, but you know, in the Mexico game, he had a ton of saves. I think it was like double digit saves, right? So
even early in the game,
something to look out for.
Early in the game today, he was peppered. Oh, yeah. You know, there was what, like four saves in the first 20 minutes, and it just so happens that he plays a position where you can't make a mistake, right? I mean, if you count on your hand how many mistakes, you know, Sam Vines had today. Right, or Aaron Herrera. Oh gosh,
Jesus Herrera.
Yeah, no, if we're talking about guys who stock dropped, man, he was supposed to be one of our. He's supposed to be one of our top 3-4 strikers for the U.S. overall men's national team pool. He scored a hat trick back in December or whenever it was last. Gosh, he was disappointing, and just the players around him may not have been as good, so that's a factor. But I was expecting a lot more out of him.
I mean, so many of these guys, right? Like Jonathan Lewis. I mean, when he played for the senior team, I kind of had to look this guy up. And I said, well, wait, hold on here.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Who is this guy? Right? And then, you know, Jordy Mihaljevic. It's not every day Thierry Henry recruits you to CF Montreal. Yeah, obviously, Thierry Henry left, but he saw something in him. You know?
Sure.
These guys, it was a disaster of a tournament. It really was. I mean, it's disheartening. It's all those different things. Hassani Dotson, ghost, right?
Yeah, he was a ghost today.
You know, and look, like, you know, the coach's decision to play him on a bum ankle.
Yeah. Questionable. Well, the center backs were scary.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at that depth. And, I mean, that's our problem with the senior team is who's going to be that right center back. And you look at the U23s, and you're like, oh boy, we don't have anyone in the pipeline. So this is, I don't know what's going on with American soccer and development of center backs, but Danny, you're a center back. What's going on, man? Come on.
It's a hard position to develop, apparently, in U.S. soccer.
I mean, I want to touch on one thing, please. Too. I think, you know, kind of the mentality piece of it, right? And, you know, I had some time to think about this afternoon, and it was like, you know, what's going on, right? Like, what's going on behind the scenes that we don't see? You know, and it took me back to something Berhalter said about the January camp, right? Where Berhalter said, you know, he had said there was this buzz about Europe going around, right? And the January camp, right, we had the senior team also training with the U23s and then going a separate ways and playing with some U23s being pulled up. And he said there was just this buzz, this talk about Europe. Guys going to Europe, who's there, who's doing what. And to me, like, I mean, that's just a me mentality, right? Like, you're supposed to be there with the national team, right? You look at other national teams, El Tricolor, right? The Mexican national team, the Mineshaft, and you have, you know, the Brazilian national team and all these. When people go there, no matter what level it is, and I listened to the Mexican commentator today say this in the Mexico game, you forget about all those things. You forget about your worries. You forget about your club problems. And you go and you play for the national team. So to hear Berhalter and go back to that saying, it was this, guys were talking about Europe. Man, you just need to be focusing on the present. You need to be there. And it was fantastic, right? You saw the likes of DK, Areola, Morris, and Reynolds, right? Secure transfers to Europe, you know, on temporary basis. But that's a distraction at the end of the day. If I'm Berhalter, I'm ultimately worried that because it's pulling and it's taking away from the present, from these guys that are focusing on what we need to do now. And I think you look at it and it's like this foster, you know, it fostered some sense of like a me mentality versus a we mentality. I think the second thing you bring in, right, is you look at this U23 roster and you look at all these guys, right? You look at the ages, you look at where they've played, you look at the, you know, a lot of them are, most of them are homegrown players. Came up through the academies, came up through these things. I think what the U.S. as a federation is doing with recruiting, you know, foreign nationals, you know, the Yunus Musas, you know, all of these, you know, guys Efren Alvarez, right? If I was Efren Alvarez, forget it, man. Mexico all the way. I wouldn't even bat an eye at the U.S. anymore. But you know, if you're looking at these guys like, you know, Henry Kessler, and you're looking at these 23, 24-year-old guys that are on the U23 team, and you see the Federation recruiting other guys that are foreign nationals to come and play for the national team, it's got to create a little bit of separation, right? I would think that some guys are sitting at different tables, you know, at this January camp. You know, that you've got all the homegrown guys that might be sitting together, and all the guys that may have been foreign nationals, you know, sitting, you know, with each other or whatever. To me, it's a sense of disharmony. And I don't, like, I love what they're doing. I love that they're bringing in these players that are going to give us the spunk. But what is that doing for our overall kind of mentality, right? And then you expect to say, hey, U23s, you know what? Boom, go. Win us this. So then, you know, we could probably sprinkle in some pepper and actually put together a better team for the Olympics. I'm just a little bit concerned with that mentality. I have to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something to certainly that you look at U.S. soccer and you see the different dual nationals who are part of the squad. And you hope that Berhalter they're doing things in the right way, that are going to be getting guys who are U.S. through and through. And if that's not the case, then they shouldn't be a part of the squad. So, but at the end of the day, I think that's why they hired Berhalter, and hopefully they're moving things in the right direction at the senior team. We're not seeing all those behind the scene things. So it's hard to know exactly what the situation is there. But you hope that those conversations that they're having, and the conversations one-on-one with those players and as a team as a whole too, that they're finding that vibe within the team. And making sure that everyone's going to fit in with that that culture that they're trying to create.
And that's it. I think, you know, we need that culture. Berhalter, we don't know what that culture is, right? I mean, I don't know. It's disheartening on those levels, because I thought that we figured it out.
Yeah, I think, you know, that with Berhalter. And Berhalter, quite frankly, he hasn't had a game that has really meant something in his time as a coach. We're going to see that here in the Nations League games coming up in June, and Gold Cup games. Yeah, at the end of the day, the only things that the games that really matter are the World Cup qualifiers. And I hope we got to a good start. But man, I will say this. I remain very positive about where we're at right now as a whole. Despite today's result with the U23 Olympic qualifying loss, that was incredibly disheartening. But man, I remain very positive. I think that we're going in a good direction with the senior national team. And I'm excited for what is to come. Excited to see the player development at their clubs, and as they come back together in June for the national team, what the next steps are there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited too, even though today was not, you know, started off well, but, you know, getting knocked out by Honduras, not fun, but, you know, I'm trying to look at the positives and the bright side of just the future of what's going on the rest of this year, and we've got better days ahead, and I'm excited. I'm excited for the player pool with the senior team, and kind of just time to forget about the U23 team. Sorry, guys. Even if you guys would have advanced, you guys weren't going to be the ones competing in the Olympics. We were just going to take the age-eligible guys from the senior team to come play in the Olympics. So, Matt, wanted to thank you for having, you know, the time to be on this podcast with us, man. It's always good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise. You know, and I want to, you know, look, I'm not this like pessimistic gremlin that lives under the table, right? You know,
you
want to talk about You want to talk about optimistic. I am an Arsenal supporter through and through. So for me to still be an Arsenal supporter, you got to say there's a bit of optimism there. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm excited, right? Me and my natural instincts as actually an individual and in analytics is, you know, always trying to prepare for the worst, right? What's the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? And then try and build from there. I hope that we saw it today. I hope that it answers a lot of questions for Berhalter and his coaching staff about the player pool from the U23, in addition to what he saw with his senior squad. And I hope we build from it. You know, if you know, someone like, you know, let's just say, you know, Jesus Ferreira, right? And he sees this as a learning opportunity. I'll eat my words, you know, I'll eat my words coming in the fall if we've got guys that are going to turn this around. Sure. And I sure hope that they do, because I'd love to be wrong about the U23 roster right now. That's all I can say.
You and me both, Matt. But man, it's been good to have you on and joining us, Cody. As always, I think it's fun to have this podcast to get to talk a little U.S. Men's National Team U23s today, but U.S. Men's National Team as a whole. So, episode number 3, there we are. Play the advantage. We'll be back. Some good times are ahead. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next.